mind-changing moment.
As a people pleaser, I have to say no here. Because when we come from a place of emptiness, we can't wholeheartedly show up in any of our relationships.
Suffering from people pleaser burnout? Where do you draw the line between people pleasing and me first selfishness? Board certified by the American Association of Drugless Practitioners trained in conscious parenting, my next guest is an expert at getting to the core of this destructive behavior, people pleasing. Next, on Self Talk Radio Show, brought to you by Pure Energy Apothecary, now offering hand sanitizers and lotions in scented and unscented. Get yours at pureenergybody.com. Hi, Kamini.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you. Now, you're the founder and CEO of Live Joy Your Way and the Authentic Me Rise Up program. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes. So I am a certified life coach, and I created the Rise Up program. What that stands for is reveal, inner work, self-awareness, elements, unlearn, and program. And what that really is it's how I approach coaching my clients on really understanding what stories they have told themselves inadvertently or covertly, and how we can shift mindsets, behavior patterns, figure out what tools and elements will help support them in their shifting from one way of showing up in the world to a more empowered self-leader way of showing up. And we then program that into a new story that they want to write for themselves.
Now, how can people-pleasing be destructive?
So I speak from personal experience with this. What happens with people-pleasing is we end up defining our self-worth from external sources. So we are living to external validation and external expectations, and we become a hostage to that. And we end up losing sight of the fact that our uniqueness is our actual gift that we're bringing to this world. And so as we people please, we turn ourselves inside out to make ourselves whatever we think other people want us to be or what we should be. And that ends up leading to codependency and toxic relationships, as well as just losing one's own identity. We end up defining ourselves by the roles that we play rather than who we are at our core. And we lose sight of our core gifts and lose sight of what we value. And we start living it to other people's values and what they want us to be rather than who we actually are.
Yeah. And I see that played out in social media quite a bit. You know, you're taking pictures, you know,
yes,
everything's great.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing, right, is that we see these wonderful pictures on social media. And it always reminds me, and I always go back to this one quote I saw at some point. It was either on Pinterest or something, because I love quotes. One of them was, "Don't judge me by the chapter you walked in on." And what happens with social media is we are judging the people that we're seeing in that snippet of time. And we're judging what's going well for them. And then we end up comparing ourselves. And we think we have to change in order to live up to those, not just expectations, but we're looking for that validation to say, oh yeah, you're doing well. You know, even as a mom, so I'm a mom of five. And a lot of times I'll hear, oh my goodness, you know, you're superwoman. And you end up getting accolades for having a hugely packed schedule. Versus, you know, if you meet somebody who's just like, oh yeah, I'm, you know, hanging out at the house today, a lot of times in society, they're deemed as like lazy or not doing enough. But in fact, they're doing just exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And so we end up defining value by how much can you pack into a day versus, you know, the quality of your day.
I'm gobsmacked. You have five children. That's a lot of time management skills must be right up there for you, or am I projecting my own people pleasing on you?
Well, you know what's so funny is, so they range in age from 6 to 18. So it's not that I have five really young children. So my older children obviously are more self-sufficient. However, they do need guidance. I'm going to be clear about that. I do think the teenage years, and I actually work with a lot of teens who are highly stressed out and overwhelmed. So that's not to say that I can kind of send them on their way and not worry about it, but it leads me to be very simple with, expectations of self. And it really has pushed me into where I am today, they were honestly my catalyst to recognizing my people-pleasing behaviors, because I started seeing them recreate that and realized, okay, I've got to shift this. Otherwise, this is just going to cycle for generations.
Now, what were some of the people-pleasing behaviors that you kind of caught yourself and said, oh, I'm doing it?
Well, so for me personally, I didn't catch it at first. I didn't catch that, you know, I was basically twisting myself inside out to make sure that I really didn't have boundaries. I would say yes constantly. So like if something needed to be done at school, for instance, or there was like some bake sale, I'd be like, oh, sure, I can do 24 cupcakes in the next 12 hours. I would bend myself inside and out to make sure that other people were happy and was worried about their happiness, not recognizing that I'm not responsible for other people's happiness, but I can contribute to it. And what happened was my own children started worrying so much about making sure that, you know, I was happy, that dad was happy with them, that their teachers were happy with them, that their friends were okay. And I was seeing it play out in front of me and realized that's a learned behavior. They got that from me. So unless I dial it back and do that self-work, and then also learn to communicate that, recognize that as a parent, it's okay to say to your children, you know, I either messed up or that wasn't the right way to do something, and I've learned from it, and this is a new way that I'm going to start approaching these things. I was able to reset myself. And so it's not to say that the people pleasing has gone away 100%. I think that self-growth and self-work is a constant process. I don't think you ever get there, so to speak. I think you can continually be aware, though, and keep continually learn from what you're going through. I really feel that life's a journey that is meant to teach us, you know, different things along the way. But I did. I saw my children kind of starting to behave with those same patterns. And then in my own self-work and self-reflection, I realized, oh my word, that started when I was really young.
Yeah. Are you a people pleaser? We're going to find out some signature signs of people pleasing and how to turn that around for yourself when we come back with my guest, Kamini Wood, on Self Talk Radio Show. Can't sleep? Have brain fog? Try this. Sleep meditation, soothing meditations to help you stop bad habits, start positive change, and sleep like a baby. Sleepmeditation.org. Welcome back to Self Talk Radio Show. I'm Sarah Spencer. My guest is Kamini Wood. She is the founder and CEO of Live Joy Your Way and the Authentic Me Rise Up program, talking about people pleaser burnout. And what are some signs that you might be people pleasing?
Yes, the signs of people pleasing for me and my clients, the ones that I see most often, are the inability to say no. When you're asked to do something, you feel obliged to say yes. And if you say no, the inner critic takes off and you feel guilty. Another one is the fix it mentality, that it's my job to fix everything. Because we want to make sure that everyone around us is happy. And so we try to just fix it, which leads into and I'm air quoting here, the control all the things. Those of us who are people pleasers like to control all the things, because again, this goes back to thinking that we're ultimately responsible for making sure that everybody around us is okay. And so we take on the world. We just add to our list of things that we've got to do because we're trying to control it so that nobody else has to actually worry about anything. Which also leads into just the concept of, we just really take on the responsibility for, everyone's happiness. You know, when we say, especially as parents, we'll say things like, I just want my children to be happy, which is a very loving thought. But when you really break that down, and I learned this through conscious parenting, you know, we have to learn that our children and everybody around us, we're all individually responsible for our own happiness. We can contribute to somebody's happiness, but we're not ultimately responsible for it. And us people pleasers think immediately that if somebody's unhappy, somehow we may have caused it, or we need to go ahead and make them happy. And so we'll avoid conflict, or we won't communicate our own needs because we're taking care of somebody else's needs first.
And then you come off as being inauthentic,
You know, like I have a people pleaser in my family, and then I don't know if she's being straight up with me or she's placating me. Yeah,
exactly.
It's tough on the other end.
A silly little example is, when you ask a people pleaser, for instance, what they want for dinner, and they're like, oh, you know, it's fine, whatever you want. And then if you finally push them and they'll say, you know, whatever, sushi, you actually don't know that if they really want sushi or did they really say sushi because they thought that the person that was asking the question wanted sushi. Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That is. And it is so you pull your hair out by the end of it. You know, it's like, do you really want this? What would you like? What would make you happy? I don't know. Jumping off a bridge at this point would make me happy. Yeah. 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 So how did you break your habit of people pleasing?
So for me, it was a lot of work on really getting in tune with at any given time, what do I feel and what do I need? And then learning to communicate that to people around me. Because as a people pleaser, the habit for me was never being in touch with my own self. And so the biggest part was really learning to communicate with myself. What am I feeling and what do I need? And from there, building this muscle of learning to communicate from a place of love, but learning to communicate to the people around me what I discovered I needed. So going back to my example of, you know, at the school wants 24 cupcakes and, you know, the next day, you know, before I used to say, oh, sure, I can do that. And then pull my hair out and get upset and lose my temper. And just because I was overwhelmed, instead it was, what do I feel in this moment? In this moment, I feel like my list is really packed. I don't have the time. What do I need? I need to not take this on right now. And then communicating to my child, because I used to think that my child would feel that I, you know, didn't love them enough or whatnot. I would say, you know, mommy really wants to do this, but right now I have too many things on my to-do list. I will definitely look forward to maybe participating the next time, and also communicating effectively to whichever teacher's asking me to participate. Again, coming from a place of love, but then recognizing that no is a complete sentence.
Now, where
I really didn't have it. Go ahead.
Yeah. Where do you draw the line between people pleasing and being selfish?
You know, that's such a great question, because I talk also a lot about self-compassion, and a lot of people think that practicing self-compassion is selfish. I go back to the analogy of that oxygen mask, right? We have to put your own oxygen mask on first before you can help those around you. It comes down to are you coming from a place of fullness, or are you running on empty? Because if you can recognize I'm running on empty, you know that you're not being selfish. This is just actually practicing self-love and self-compassion so that you can continue to show up. Because when we come from a place of emptiness, we can't wholeheartedly show up in any of our relationships. And so as a people pleaser, getting in touch with where I am, you know, internally, where am I currently? Like I really can't, I have to say no here. And it really does come down to how clear are you with yourself? How much it's honoring oneself and recognizing that it's okay for you to fulfill your needs. Because if you try to continually fill everybody else's needs without taking care of your own, eventually you are going to be burned out. Like there's nothing left to give. You can't pour from an empty cup.
Now, where does this need of people pleasing come from initially? Is it, you know, as the eldest child? Is it, you know, what are the telltale signs, if you will, if there are any, of this being an issue later in life if you're looking at children?
So I think everybody, again, is very unique. I think that when we can travel back and sort of look at when we were younger, a lot of these issues will show up in messages we either received, you know, on the surface, or messages we covertly received, just, you know, because children are sponges. They absorb everything around them. So sometimes words aren't even spoken, but it's the actions that were made or taken. So if we can dial back into time and figure out what happened during our childhood years between the ages of like 5 to 10, we generally can trace back sometimes some of these covert messages and thought patterns and belief systems that were instilled in us. Like for me personally, I grew up with the odd name of Kamini in a very predominantly white neighborhood. We were one of two Indian families, so I stuck out. And so for me, there was this covert message of try to fit in, try to blend in as best you can. And so for me personally, it became don't be a burden, don't be, you know, don't rock the boat, don't make waves, make sure everybody around you is happy with you, avoid conflict at all costs. And so then that was the message and sort of the thought pattern and belief system I started with when I was in my elementary school years. And then I ended up carrying it with me throughout my older years. And so I think each person has a unique story behind it, but usually we can trace it back to something that happened when we were younger.
Kamini Wood is my guest on Self Talk Radio Show. And when we come back, we're going to ask more about the conscious parenting. I want to know more about that and what that involves when we come back on Self Talk Radio Show.
Ready to create your own podcast? Not sure where to begin? Start with WebHelp US. They built Self Talk Radio Show's site and the site for I Love Old Time Radio Show, now boasting over 100,000 downloads. Why not have them build yours? WebHelpUS.com.
Welcome back to Self Talk Radio Show. I'm Sarah Spencer. My guest is Kamini Wood, and I want to ask you about conscious parenting. What does that mean?
Conscious parenting is, the way that I describe it is it's being aware of how we're showing up as parents. What happens when we become parents is, and I'm speaking from experience, we want so much for our children. We want them to be confident. We want them to be have high self-esteem. We don't ever want them to be hurt. And we have our own ideals, I guess you will, of like what success would look like for our children. And when we can become conscious parents, we slow it down and recognize, and I've said this before in the show, but it comes back to recognize that we are not ultimately responsible for the happiness of our child, but we can contribute to it. It's also recognizing that they're not ours in a possessive form. What we are we get to be their guide. We get to guide them through their formative years so that they can develop into these self-sufficient humans. And so when we can dial that back and recognize that there's not ownership here, but there's guide and leadership, we can then come from a place of how can we guide our children to be able to be self-sufficient, be able to recognize their own unique values and core gifts so that then they can define success for themselves how they see it. They can define happiness how they see it, rather than using our ideals and our ideas of what it is and project that onto them.
Now, Kamini, you work with both adults and teens. How are they mm-hmm. different to work with?
So adults obviously have had more years of the pattern and thought beliefs to be put into place. Teens are very, what I love about working with teens is they really don't have the same filter that adults will. Granted, a lot of teens will come to me and they're worried about saying the right thing. And once I can get past that level of them understanding that when they work with me, they're in a completely safe and judgment-free space, they are very raw with what's on their mind, which I absolutely love. Because when you can get to that rawness of what's really underneath these layers of the shoulds and the ought tos, that's when you can actually start pulling out, you know, your true unique gifts. I do feel that teens right now are under immense pressure just dealing with all of the different ways that these stressors come at them, whether they be family, you know, social, school, athletics, you know, performance of some type. There are so many levels to it that I feel that with teens, you have to take it in pieces. And with adults, yes, there are still so many levels, but because of the way that our minds, you know, as an adult, your mind is more fully formed, you're able to have a different type of conversation than I am with the teens. I have to take it somewhat in smaller pieces with the teens.
Now, with the COVID-19, we're in the midst of that right now. Teens are home. They're not mm-hmm. able to get out, and mm-hmm. there's social isolation. Are there any things that we as parents should be doing with our teens to help communicate and and support them in this really unprecedented time?
I absolutely love that you asked that question, because the thing that we have to realize is as much pressure and stress that we're under as parents, our teens are feeling those anxieties and stressors too. A lot of them who go to normal school have suddenly been thrown into a world where they are socially isolated. They don't see their friends in the flesh. They suddenly aren't thrown into virtual learning, which is just totally brand new for some of them. You know, they're used to the in-class, face-to-face learning style. Some of them are into athletics or other activities that suddenly have been shut down, and they don't have that outlet anymore. And so as parents, if we can give them that space to feel the emotions that they're having, you know, so often we tend to try to contain our emotions and just not deal with them. We either distract or numb or do what we just to avoid them. We have to let our teens and encourage them to share what emotions they're having and let them rise and crest. Because if we don't, they just stay bottled up and they're just recirculating and they just get stronger and stronger. And it's almost like a volcano that eventually it's going to erupt. We just don't know the way it's going to erupt. And the other part of it is also talking to them about social distancing and isolation and the difference between them. While yes, we have to social distance, we don't have to be isolated. And so it's still encouraging them to reach out to their support system, whether, you know, in their friends, continue to call, text, you know, FaceTime. Yes, you can't be in the flesh with each other, but that doesn't mean you can't communicate. And communication right now is huge.
And what do you do if you're the parent of a child and you say, hey, how you doing? Fine.
Yeah.
That just slays me.
I have one of those too.
Yeah.
It's learning to ask deeper questions than that. Like, you know, for instance, my daughter the other day was, you could just see it on her face that she was stressed out. And I said to her, you know, well, how's it going? Fine. Okay. Well, how are you feeling about, and then get specific with something that you know that they're working on. How are you feeling about it? And then I asked her, what do you need from me to support you? Which are deeper questions than how are you doing? Mm. You know, that really gets into them identifying how are they actually feeling about something specific and what do they need, and helping them, supporting them, getting to that place of really identifying for themselves what's going on inside of them.
If I ask, though, you know, what is it that, you know, what can I do to support you? What do you need? They honestly come back and say, I have no idea. I'm feeling so lost right now that my world got turned upside down. Mm-hmm. And we as parents are feeling that way, too. You know, so how do we balance our own uncertainty in these times and the needs of our children?
You know, what's so interesting is that you said it actually right in that question was, you're feeling it too. And so it's actually just validating it. What we have to realize is we don't have to fix it. You know, it's not up to us to constantly fix for our children, but sometimes it's just the actual practice of validating that, you know what? I know this is tough. I've never experienced anything like this before. I'm not really sure how this is all going to shake out. You know, we think that we're responsible for giving them all the answers. And the truth in this particular, this is actually testing us. None of us really know the answers here. So it's actually being okay with saying, you know what? I get it. This causes a lot of anxiety. Like, I understand where you're coming from. I wish I had the answers. I really don't. But this is what I know to date. And like, communicate what we do know and ask them what they've heard. Sometimes some of our teens are actually going and listening to news, and we don't really know what sources they're listening to. So sometimes also just opening that dialogue to understand what it is that they've heard, so we can actually communicate whether or not, you know, their sources are accurate sources, for instance, because there are so many ways to get information now, right? Like, you could get your information off of Twitter, which is obviously going to be different than from the CDC.
Exactly.
So it's very important to communicate with them of, well, what is it that you've heard, or what is it that you know?
And let's verify if that's true.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you've released a second book, Life's Gentle Reminders. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So my book, it's so interesting because it came out right as all of this COVID-19 happened. And at first, I wasn't sure that it was the right time to have released a book. And then I realized it's actually probably a very perfect time. The book itself is a compilation of analogies of things that happen in my everyday life, for instance, that I might have thought of as negative or stressors or just not the greatest experiences, but instead, in my analogies, I reframe them and show how you can look at certain things that happen in life and recognize that there's an opportunity to grow from it, whether it, you know, like from a self-growth perspective or just a way to develop your own ability to see how resilient you are and can be. And so it was interesting that this book came out at this time, because truthfully, I've gone through my own stages of anger, grief, sadness, just anxiety with this whole COVID-19. But then it all comes back down to, well, all this gratitude that I have for the fact that I'm, you know, got a roof over my head. I get time with my children. We have food to eat, clean water to drink. And then you're left with gratitude, right? And so it's a way to say, okay, well, now what can I learn from the situation that we're in?
Yeah.
So it's taking, you know, the things that we're experiencing in life and recognizing it goes back to that thing that I mentioned before, the anchoring thought, which is life is a journey and it's happening for us, not to us. And so it's taking what are we experiencing and how do we learn from it and move forward?
Kamini Wood has been my guest. She's the founder and CEO of Live Joy Your Way and the Authentic Me Rise Up program. How do we learn more about you, Kamini, and get your book?
You can visit my website, which is kaminiwood.com, kaminiwood.com. And I'm also on Facebook, so feel free to reach out to me there. It's actually facebook.com/itsauthenticme is my business page. If you send me a message on Facebook, I will certainly answer it.
All right. And we'll also have links on our website, selftalkradioshow.com. Kamini, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Sarah Spencer for Self Talk Radio Show. If you're a fan of Self Talk Radio Show, head out to our Facebook page, take a picture of yourself listening to the show, and you could win yourself a $25 gift card courtesy of Pure Energy Apothecary or one of our guests or sponsors. Thank you so much for listening to Self Talk Radio Show, mind-changing radio, where you can find it on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and of course at selftalkradioshow.com.